What's up, nerds? Welcome to the Anatomy Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Hillary, and in conversation with me today, I have Olivia Rains. Olivia is a communication access specialist representing the state of Texas at the Office of Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services. She, too, has a little bit of history with hearing loss herself. Welcome to the podcast, Olivia.
Hey, Hillary, how are you?
I am so great. I am so excited you're on the show, love.
Likewise.
Excellent. Let's dive right in. Tell us a little bit about your backstory with your hearing loss and how you overcame that.
Great. Yeah. So basically, I was born with a genetic hearing birth defect, but I got it from my dad, but it actually progressed for some reason handing on to me. So I was born with a submucous cleft palate, and it's a true split, what they call a true split. So there's two bones down the roof of the mouth and two uvulas, but instead of the bones fusing together like they're supposed to, they just never did before I was born. But the tissue actually did grow between the bone structure. So I didn't have a full cleft, so it's a little bit more rare of one of the, out of all the cleft palates, but I was born with that and also some eustachian tube dysfunction, which causes, between that and the other issues, had caused a lot of medical conditions that, like otitis media and otosclerosis, and so it caused a lot of calcification in my hearing structure inside of my ears, which then caused my hearing loss. So they didn't detect this, though, until I was much older, around 3, because I wasn't speaking and I wasn't walking like my twin. I have a twin sister. We're fraternal, but she didn't have any of those issues. So they kind of compared it based on that. So that's kind of how it started. And then I basically went through severe to profound loss of hearing until I was in high school, but I was mainstreamed. So really had to just acclimate, pretend I could hear when I didn't, try to do the best I could, but my parents did put me through speech therapy through most of grade school. But I didn't have a surgery until I was in high school, so it was really, really, really hard. And
what was the surgery then that you got?
I had a reconstruction of a tympanoplasty on my right ear, and then that gave me about another 20 or 30 decibels of hearing. At the time, and both of my ears are around 70 pure tone average, which is like, I like tell people that may not know, it's like, it's basically like I had about a 70% hearing loss. So I really only had about 25 to 30% of my hearing. Okay. And so when you take that into considerations of how a hearing world is, it's very hard for someone like I was very deaf. And so that's kind of my background of why I'm so passionate about this and what you're doing and talking about these things and bringing awareness. And but that is where I could go on longer. There's definitely a lot of I had so many trial and errors with doctors and with tubes and procedures, and they even wanted to give me a cochlear implant in high school. I said no. There's all these facets that kind of interwove. They wanted to do surgery on me when I was a baby, and my mom luckily said no. I'm so glad she did. There are people that will opt for surgery on the cleft palates, but I feel like that's such a specifically sticky situation, and it's very case by case, because I've had parents contact me before, definitely. And what should I do with my child? And I really think it's so hard. I feel bad for the hearing parents because...
It's a difficult decision to make, right? Like, especially when the kiddo is really, really young. But
90% of deaf and hard of hearing kids are born to hearing parents. So, that's a huge, and these parents are just, they don't know. And especially if it's a very rare condition, like if it's meningitis or something like this, that, or even just they have by birth are just deaf and there's nothing that can be fixed medically for it. It's a hard decision for those parents, I feel, for them.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit about my background.
A little bit of your background, a little bit about
just
Olivia.
A little.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah, but you're very versed in hearing loss and the world of the deaf and hard of hearing, and you know a ton about the anatomy of the ear, which is what we're going to be talking about today.
Absolutely. It's so...
Yeah.
It's such
we're going to nerd out.
It's an empowering thing to know our bodies and know what's going on with us, like if we have a condition or situation. And that's what gave me empowerment, is to learning all this and studying it and figuring it out because I didn't have doctors telling me, and I was wondering what is going on. And I was not until my 30s that I had a doctor, that a specialist in ENT, tell me what was really happening. And I'm just in love with anatomy because of that. So
yeah, I love that. That's really cool that doctor did that. That's neat.
Yeah.
So let's dive right in. Let's talk about the anatomy of the ear, shall we?
Yeah.
So the ear is obviously the organ of hearing and also balance, if you didn't know. And the parts of the ear include the external or outer ear, which is the pinna or the auricle. And that's like the main part of the ear, like the outside, like the part that you get pierced, and like the part when, like, you know, your kid's learning about ears, you grab their little earlobe, like, this is your ear. That part, that's what we're talking about. So that's the outside of the ear. And then it leads into the external auditory canal or the tube. And that's the part of the ear when you take a Q-tip and you clean out the earwax in your ears. That's part you're basically pointing at the external auditory canal when you are using a Q-tip. And it's the tube that connects the outer ear to the inside or the middle ear. And then just past that is the tympanic membrane. That is your eardrum. And the tympanic membrane divides the external ear from the middle ear. Have you seen a tympanic membrane, Olivia? Like in a cadaver or in like a textbook or anything?
Yeah, and also even my own. A lot of the doctors I had would have cameras when they would do the either different tubal procedures or just different exams. And so I would often see, I get to
your
see
your own. That is so cool. You've seen your own. Like, not a lot of people get to see their own eardrum. That's
yeah,
so cool.
Super creepy.
A little bit, right?
I think, but when you're a kid.
Yeah, probably pretty scary. You're like, wait, what is that? What are you doing to that? I really want to, you know, not, I don't want that to hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So then just past the tympanic membrane, you have the middle ear or the tympanic cavity. And this consists of your ossicles. And these are three small bones that are connected and transmit sound waves to the inner ear. These three little bones are the malleus, incus, and stapes. They are also the smallest bones in the human body. Also, fun fact, one of my favorite bones of the human body, they're tiny. They're itsy bitsy bitsy. They're like smaller than your pinky nail. Like, just the coolest little bones. And like they work together to hear. It's amazing.
And mine, actually, I found out from my more recent surgery from the last tympanoplasty I had on the other ear. I was in my 30s, and I had a previous doctor in the past suspect malformation of one of my hearing bones. So he wanted to, you know, he just let me know. And I said, okay, well, when I had my other tympanoplasty, I told that doctor, I said, will you let me know if there's any malformation of these bones? I said, the past doctor was letting me know. And he came after my surgery. He told me, you're right, the malleus bones were not formed properly from birth. So that's why they weren't vibrating them. So my loss is mostly conductive because of that, plus the palate, plus Eustachian tube stuff. So yeah, it was pretty interesting to find that out. Like, wow. And, you know, like you said, those bones are, oh, it's so crazy. I have a friend who had a stapedectomy and had to have the staped bone, like, replaced, or, you know, prosthetics put in place of her hearing bone too. So very painful. I cannot even imagine.
That's so wild. I didn't even know that was something that you could do. That's crazy.
Like you said, they're so teeny tiny.
They are. They're itsy bitsy. Like they literally are. Like, look at, like, listeners, look at your pinky nail. They're smaller than your pinky nail. It's crazy. They're really itsy bitsy little bones. They're tiny.
So amazing.
And it's impressive what they're able to do. Like, that is how you hear.
Right. And then the cochlea, like what a lot of people I love to geek out about to tell people, is that when you really think about it, it's really the main job at the end is that cochlea with those hair cells. And that is only the size. That's the only organ we are born with that never changes in size our whole life. And it's the half the size of a dime. And I think probably you can explain that, the little seashell in our ear that processes mm-hmm. all the
oh, yeah. we'll be getting
fluid
to it.
And frequencies. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, we'll be nerding out about that in just a second. We're in the eustachian tube right now, and then like the cochlea is like in the way inner part of the ear. But the cochlea is amazing. It's just this like teensy tiny little piece, and it's just such a cool little piece. And it, like, just like you said, it has like all of the teeny tiny hairs in it, and every single one of those hairs has a neuron that goes straight from the cochlea to your brain, and these neurons are firing like at just fractions of a second, and it's amazing. It's happening so quickly. It's just these teensy tiny little movements, and then that movement of those hairs goes to your brain, and that's how you hear. It's really cool. It's just absolutely amazing.
I love it. I like to tell people it's kind of like you have someone sending files to somebody to put in a vault and store, and whenever you hear certain sounds, that's basically like there's the person. They're going through, like you said, the neurons are trying to find those sounds to identify them, so our brains can tell us, like, you just heard a bird or you just heard a car. And when people realize that, they really appreciate more further, like, how we're really hearing, and it's such a process beyond our belief. Yeah.
Totally. So we were at the eustachian tube. That's like the middle of the ear. And this is a canal that links the middle ear to the back of the nose. So that's kind of what you were talking about with all of the deformities that you were born with, like your palate wasn't entirely closed. Well, all of that is just not going to allow everything to work together. So the ears and the nose and the throat is all connected. So if something goes wrong with any of them, it's going to affect that whole system.
It's so fragile too. People don't realize how, like you said, how connected those things are and how it can affect all the rest of the things too. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Totally. The eustachian tube helps to equalize the pressure in the middle ear too, which I find really interesting. Like, that's like when you're up in a plane or when you're down scuba diving or anything like that, like the eustachian tube is what's really kind of helping your body adjust to those pressure changes.
I can't do that actually, because both my eardrums are now grafts.
Oh,
so like,
really?
Yeah. So I don't feel what other, I can't go underwater below 4 feet either. Because of my graft.
That's
so
wild.
I just have to be careful. But like you said, the plane thing, like, it, other people will like say
how is flying
pop, and it feels just like it's like a heavy pressure. And I know a lot of it has to do with the eustachian tube issues I have, but also because my tympanic is all, it's just grafts from my skin, from the back of my, when they did my tympanoplasties, they used skin from underneath the ear area that they took. That's what they told me, at least, that they took skin from there to create this little eardrum.
Oh, so my goodness.
I don't get to feel those funny things y'all feel.
That is so wild. So, I mean, it's probably very different tissue then. Like, I don't know exactly what tissue, you know, the eardrum is made of, but it's got to be different from the tissue that's used from the back of your ear, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. So that makes sense bizarre. That it would work differently and not be able to pop like others do when they're in a plane. Fascinating, my love. Fascinating. That's crazy. So let's get back to the cochlea. So now we're just past the eustachian tube. We have the inner ear, and the inner ear consists of our cool cochlea that we were talking about. And this part is what contains the nerves for hearing. And the main nerve that's going to connect all of those nerves in the cochlea is the vestibular nerve. And that vestibular nerve sends all of those messages to the brain. And then next to the cochlea is a semicircular canals, which contains receptors for balance. Olivia, how is your balance?
Oh, it's terrible.
Oh, no.
All my life. Yeah. So especially when I was younger and I had a lot of fluid issues, since my eardrums weren't functioning properly and my hearing bones weren't, and the eustachian tube, everything was kind of pressured. So I often just had so much fluid backup because the fluid wasn't being processed properly like how a regular ear would. So it's very painful, but also I just had no balance. Like, my mom would watch my sister start to walk and learn to walk as a baby, but then I would crawl because, and my head and all my photos and my baby photos is tilted.
Yeah, right? Because you're like,
but they didn't really understand. Yeah. And so really took me a long time. So I don't really trust my balance.
Yeah, I don't blame but, you. I don't blame you.
And a lot of that, too, that I've also I've learned some recent stuff, researching more into some cochlea stuff because of the new technology and research coming out. And that when something I found out, which I really think is interesting, is that when you get a cochlear implant and they put that electrode, push that electrode through the cochlea spiral part above those hair cells, that the fluid leaking from the cochlea that needs to be in there to move those hair cells with the sound comes out. Some of it comes out. Some of it is leaked out during surgery, which is totally normal. It's just how it is. But that's why some people who have cochlear implants will have a lot of major balance issues like the 2 or 3 weeks following their surgery if they get an implant, so which is really interesting.
Does the body replace that fluid, do you know?
That I know of, it does not. That's just what I know of. But what I recently found out, I don't think so. It's really fascinating.
That's wild.
Like,
yeah.
And now they're making hybrids they have so that's not as long as of electrodes, so it can save some of the damage from the rest of the cochlea. But I was like, whoa, that, you know, I think people that don't really know this subject very well at all would, I just think it's amazing to learn, like, how much, like, I didn't realize how fluid and pressure and all those different things you're talking about all have to be just right, you know, to send that sound.
Literally just right. Like, anything that's off, and it's going to affect pretty much your whole body, like, including your balance. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard.
I was just thinking that's why it's so important for people who, if they start to feel any kind of imbalance issues or vertigo or any slight things like that, I will say you should see an ENT first, because it could mean Meniere's, or it could mean, God forbid, like different kinds of tumors that happen in the ears and stuff like that too. But I think balance is, it's interesting. We don't really, I think most people don't think of if they're having balance issues to connect to like the hearing.
Their ear.
Yeah.
No, that's great that you bring that up, because I think that that is kind of a funny thing. Like if you just don't know, right, you're not going to think about your ears. You're going to think like, oh, maybe I just have like weak legs or something, right? Like, you're not going to think about your ears. So I'm glad you brought that up.
I forgot. I wanted to tell you really quickly, because this is an interesting thing to me. I know it's kind of probably rare, but there are people out there that might have injuries and not realize this till now. But I had a motorcycle accident where I broke my temporal bone. Perfectly clean through too. And
yikes.
I think it was called a transverse. Yeah, it wasn't long, it was a cross, but it was completely through. But usually those types of head injuries will mask a damage to like the inner ear, all the bones and structure. But because you have so much blood already because it's a head injury, so it usually gets undetected. But I started having these vertigo and weird, just strange things were happening on that side of my head. And I thought it was my ear, because I've always had ear problems my whole life. So I thought, oh, I guess this ear is getting bad again. So I was going to my ear doctor, and he said, didn't you say you had a head injury a couple years ago? And I said, yeah, I did. He's like, let me get a temporal bone scan. So as you probably know, but like if people out there that don't know, when you go into the hospital or ER and get scans for any kind of head injury from an accident, usually they're going to just do CT or MRI at the most. Like, but for anything deeper, you have to get a specific, like a temporal bone scan to detect that size of detailed of an injury. But it actually will destroy a lot of people's structure, their bone structures in their ear, hearing bones. Because I have those conditions that calcify, so I have like chronic otitis media and otosclerosis that calcifies all that. So the doctors are like, this is crazy, you had a head injury that should have destroyed those structures and those bones, but because your conditions, it didn't break them because they're already so calcified.
Oh my gosh. So it was kind of like a protective measure. You got so lucky. That's
hilarious.
That is kind of, well, I mean, I guess hilarious is a word, but that's just amazing that that happened, Olivia.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I think it's just a reminder how all of us, you know, are so fragile in certain ways, but also our body really has a way of working itself out to protect us, I guess, even if it's just a coincidence thing.
A funny coincidence, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. That is a really interesting coincidence, but that is so fascinating that that's how that worked out. That's really cool. Thank you for sharing that. That's really interesting. Probably not even something that a lot of people have even thought about, right? Or even would even think that, that those two could happen together.
Yeah.
Definitely. Very interesting. So let's switch gears just a little bit, Olivia. Can you tell us the different kinds of hearing loss?
Sure. So really, there's mainly three. And the most common is the sensory neural, which is going to be those hair cells like we talked about that everyone has in their cochlea. So everybody will have those hair cells if you're born with those cochleas that will send those signals through those hair cells. But when those are damaged, which it's either age or noise induced or an accident, there's also illnesses and ototoxicity that can cause these things. But that's the most common one. Okay. And then like someone like me, I have a mixed loss. So it's mostly conductive due to birth defects and the stuff that we discussed earlier. But people can have one or the other. So in my past job, I was a resource specialist for the state, and I did assessments for deaf and hard of hearing. And I usually kind of like, if anyone remembers MacGyver, I'm that old, I'm saying my age. But I was kind of like a deaf and hard of hearing MacGyver, and I would go to people's jobs and take equipment and, you know, depending on if they had hearing aids or cochlear implants, I would say, okay, like what type of hearing loss do you have? What is your job? What is going on? And let's look at the environment. Let's look at everything and then try to use to connect devices to help them with their hearing device and help them hear better at their job. And I had clients who lost their hearing from meningitis, which is pretty common, from cancer treatments, from gun shooting. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's Texas, so that was a pretty
common one.
Yeah, and a lot of people working in manual labor, lots of hard labor like construction and stuff that they weren't wearing protection and didn't realize.
So important. If you are in construction or in any of those fields that, you know, there's a lot of equipment making a lot of loud noise, please wear
your protection. You're not getting it back. I had to explain to people that humans are the only ones, like amphibian, like there's birds and reptiles and they and fish, the amphibians, they can grow their hair cells back. When they go deaf, they can get them back. We cannot. Still working on that. They are not, they're not there yet with that kind of research and study. They're getting there. But, you know, it's like I tell people it's gone, it's gone. Like just because when you went shooting, they're like, yeah, and I heard this ringing, but I just thought it would come back. I'm like, sorry, it's not coming back. So, like, that's why that's the most common sensory neural high-frequency loss. Conductive is not, I would say it's second. Mixed is really probably the most rare type of hearing loss, which is a little bit of both.
So let's get a little specific for our listeners who aren't super familiar with hearing loss and like the different kinds. So sensory neural is problems with like the inner ear or the nerves, right?
Yeah, that will be all of your noise-induced hearing loss, illnesses, ototoxicity from medications, which a lot of times even a client who was in high school, she was young, she had a really rare cancer. And she got cancer treatment, so she had chemo, but she also went through a lot of other types of treatments, I think like immunotherapy and stuff like that. But it actually did cause her hearing loss, so she was pretty young, so she ended up having hearing aids, and then it progressed through her treatment and then had to get a cochlear implant. So yeah, like sensory neural, for you people who don't know exactly, like it's the most common, and I would say I'm not a doctor, as far as my opinion, it's probably the most treatable because there are hearing aids and there's cochlear implants, and conductive loss is also treatable too. It's just a different type. So where we're talking about more, like you said earlier, the bone structures, and so you can get things like tympanoplasties or reconstruction surgeries, or you can get tubes, or you can get
constructive hearing loss is like damage to like the actual parts of the ear, like the in the ear, and like there's an obstruction or there's trauma.
Right, exactly. I had a client who was he was a paramedic. He came to me, he was very nervous because he's like, I haven't told my work, they don't know, but I'm really nervous because I have to help people in situations like car accidents or in a house, burning house or whatever. And he's like, I if I can't hear them, because he was single-sided deaf because he had an accident that damaged one side of his, like you said. And I said, well, you know, you are a candidate. You could get a bone-anchored hearing device, which if anyone doesn't know out there, so most people are pretty familiar with cochlear implants, but the bone-anchored ones, like, it's using conduction from your bones and your jaw and your face and your head, and that's how it's pulling sound to your ear. Like Hillary said, it's like if there's trauma or destruction to the structure of the bones and that the hearing function, you're going to replace that with something that will obtain the sound through bone vibrations. It's very fascinating. I actually was more of a, I was a candidate for that before my last surgery, but I did not want it because I had already had, you know, the plenty of ear procedures most of my life, and then the tympanoplasties, which are very painful, and I I'm supposed to wear hearing aids. I have hearing aids. I don't wear them. I mean, I'm working from home, so nowadays everyone's doing video, so I can see people's faces really well. I do very well with amplification because mine is mostly conductive, so amplification helps.
Yeah, but you can just crank the volume up.
Yeah, and bone, you know, bone conduct, I mean, they're very much progressed now more than ever, but I just wasn't, it just wasn't for me to go that far, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to wait and see, but
I mean, that's 100% your decision. Some people are 100% for it and comfortable with it and ready to go. And yeah, I want that, you know, bone anchored hearing device. And some aren't, you know, that's totally okay.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing that they're doing these now too. And I actually have here also. And then there's some people that I personally am just amazed how well they do. Like, they'll have a cochlear implant on one side and then have a hearing aid or something on the other. And it's like, that's a lot to work around. So
it's speak about all of this stuff very naturally and have a very easy flow with all of it because you just know so much. So it's perfect.
I love it.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Have you heard of the, and it's extremely rare. I can't even think of the name of it. It's like a, it's a type of hearing. It's so rare. I've only met one person in my entire life, and I'm submerged in deaf and hard of hearing.
Yeah, you're in it. Texas. You're in the world of it all.
And I've still only met one person with this, but there's a type of brainstem dysfunction that will cause the hearing loss, but it is sensorineural related to the nerve.
Really?
But she had an implant, and it was not anything it's not a cochlear implant type thing. It's nothing like that, but it's even further in than that. It's like she had to have it put in. It sounded amazing to me. I was like, oh,
what
my
is
gosh.
This?
Yeah, and it has something to do with that nerve.
Yeah, I don't know what it is,
but
that sounds really interesting.
So some people
have nerves,
some,
yeah.
Yeah, pretty complicated stuff.
Yeah, kind of sounds like it. I don't know what you're talking about, but that sounds really fascinating. That might be something we have to like look into.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I mean, I think about, and I'll be honest, and I can just say this as my opinion because I feel like it's part of talking about science too, but like I have oftentimes, I'll have days where I will look back and be like, I wished I hadn't had those surgeries. My life would be totally different though. I would only be using sign language and captioning all the time. I mostly would be communicating with sign language only, and I do know sign language fluently because before my last surgery I had doctors say you're gonna go deaf, it's gonna get worse, which was fine. I didn't actually care. I grew up that way my whole life, so it's like, oh, okay, whatever.
Yeah,
but
totally.
After
used to
you
it.
Know yeah but it's interesting to be on both sides of it because now, you know, I did go through all the speech therapy and the surgeries. And I feel one leg in both worlds.
Totally. And in the hearing world and in the deaf world.
Yeah. So I think for people trying to decide on surgeries is a big, it's hard.
Yeah, it's a big decision. It really is.
But if your health depends on it, it's different because I think I was talking to my mom recently about that, trying to explain to her how, you know, if someone's not hearing something and they're older, it's so important to still stimulate that part of the brain so that they're not going to dementia and other things. It's going to make things deteriorate more. Like, we need that brain activity to be healthier. And it's so, I think it's interesting that people think that it just shuts off at the ear, or even like with our vision. Oh, you can't see. Oh, well, sorry. But having that loss of brain stimulation to that area now is gone. It's like, well,
yeah, it's detrimental.
We slow down a lot.
A couple of different ways too. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's all the isolation and stuff too. So it's so important that people, you know, look
keep
into
their brain
hearing.
Active.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of definitely. Times since they're normal, they don't even realize it's going away. Sometimes it can be gradual. So it's really important that if people suspect they're not hearing like they used to, they should get it checked for sure. I had a client who had, I had a client who had these symptoms that I knew were related to tumors, possibly acoustic neuromas, but I can't say anything. I have to be neutral. So I was telling him, like, you know, based on what you're telling me, I really highly recommend you go get evaluated.
Yeah.
Like as soon as possible, because these symptoms had been going on for several years that he knew of. I didn't hear from him for a few months. I was a little worried. I figured he just gave up and didn't want to deal with going to do the doctor and do all the stuff.
Yeah.
And then I get an email from his mom, and she tells me, she's like, thank you so much for telling him to, for being advocating for him to get checked, because it turned out he had acoustic neuromas and they were really bad.
Oh my goodness.
Like they had gotten really big and it was really dangerous, she said at that time. So I'm like, wow, that's powerful. So
yeah, that is huge. That's fantastic that you were able to give him that nudge, you know?
Yeah.
She's doing what you do best, girl. You're an advocate.
I love it.
So let's talk a little bit about your art. I absolutely love your art. It's amazing. I scroll through your Insta all the damn time. It's just so cool. Tell us a little bit about how you got started with your anatomically focused art.
Well, I really didn't know at first what my quote-unquote style was, but I knew that I didn't know how else to express the things I'd been through. But when I was really little, so my dad's an artist, and I didn't realize when I was like, you know, when I was 4 or 5, I didn't realize I was deaf. I just did. I just kind of was in my own world. And then my dad,
like all 4 and 5 year olds,
right? Yeah. And my dad started to show me how to draw, and I just loved it because it didn't matter that I couldn't hear. I could just do something that felt fun and it felt freeing, like an escape. And so I've always been an artist, but I didn't start painting till around 2008. And I don't know, I was trying to find my style, but then I was getting really drawn towards painting anatomically when I had a heart condition. And it's another long story, but basically I had this heart condition that I was on beta blockers for. It was just PVCs, but they were pretty severe. If anyone doesn't know what those are out there, it's I'm going to get this right, I hope. Premature ventricular something. PVCs. It's basically a palpitation that is constant. And so, yeah, I had those and I was on medication to try to slow them down because they were so severe that even they would wake me up from sleeping. It was painful. Oh. So I was doing this for a couple of years and I was seeing this cardiologist who was helping me. And at the time I was younger, I was 34. And anyway, I was going through all this other stuff, which is what we figured out why I was getting them, because I was basically just under so much stress at the time. And I started painting hearts and it was just really relaxing. And I just started to feel, I don't know, like expressing like the medical stuff I was going through felt really relieving because I felt kind of alone with it. But when I painted, it just felt like I'm expressing what I'm going through. So I started doing it more and more for other things like my ears and the things I had gone through in my medical past. And so I just became enamored with it and just, it felt like another limb on my body in a way. And I
you
know, no pun intended.
No pun intended. Like it literally, like your art is such an, like it just is such a part of you. Like you see so much of you in your art and it's really cool.
Thanks. I feel like I spent so many hours in doctor's offices growing up. Like I saw so many charts that I was like fascinated with the medical arts when I was in high school.
I mean, it's cool stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And then I wished I had known, well, I guess I can't see the future, but when I was in high school in the 90s, I remember thinking maybe I can go into medical illustration. This is like my thing, right? And my dad was like, yeah, but computers are going to take over everything, so you don't even bother kind of thing. So I didn't even think about pursuing it.
I mean, which he's kind of right, but
but now it's like what I'm doing with my work. It's very much passion driven, so I can save my art for the expression and for the side, which is nice because it's not attached to money or a job. Like I don't have to. Right.
You're not
rely
depending
on
that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even though like Netter, of course, is like to me just the god of all anatomy and illustration. Oh my gosh, I can't.
Totally.
Even,
he's wonderful, my favorite.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I think it really stemmed from seeing those medical charts in the doctor's offices. And yeah. I had, spent a lot of time waiting in lobbies and things like that. And just, I don't know, it gave me comfort because doctors, half the time, you know, when they're busy coming in to help focus on whatever it is at the moment, but, you know, you see these charts and you can start getting curious and looking things mm-hmm. up and, totally. You know, and it's just, I love that. And I can use those things to warp with like either a sense of humor or with like a political view or with even just letting go of like a trauma experience somehow ingrained in it. Like I often put secret messages in my pieces that I know a lot of people don't know, but right. I can tell you now and you can see back at a piece like, oh, I see now those are actual dates. Those are numbers that make it a specific surgical date or something like yeah, that. Like, yeah. You know, I have things, little hidden meanings. It's a nice little way to express those trauma. So I totally. Encourage people to do the same.
Yeah. So one of my favorite pieces of yours is the two heads that are connected by the arteries. And I just loved that piece. And when I was messaging you, like, what is this? What does this mean? Like, this is a really fascinating piece, but like, I mean, you can just tell that there's more to that piece by just looking at it. Like, it obviously isn't just a piece about, you know, two heads, because like there's like that connection that you make is like very, very obvious and clear. And I was like, huh, I want to know what that is. And it was really cool when I had messaged you and you just like told me all about it, like, and how it's about, you know, you and your twin and how you're connected and all that stuff. And it was just, it's just such a beautiful piece. I love it.
Oh, thank you. I find that like and it's probably being a twin too, like but also feeling like in two different worlds growing up too at the same time. So
yeah.
But when I think about that, we all everything is a yin and yang. Like everything is light and dark. Everything is up and down.
Totally.
Everything, but it's all connected. Just like how our bodies work and how you need that balance. And I find peace comes from doing art like that to express that too, because it like you mm-hmm. said, you felt like this connection, or you felt like a lured to it. And I think that's because we all seek like a balance,
a deeper understanding. Yeah, like yeah. A balance and like a need to satisfy that curiosity, you know.
Yeah,
that's what it was. What is your favorite piece that you've created so far?
Oh gosh,
I know that's a hard one. I know
it's kind of like trying to tell your kids which one is your favorite. I think
I know,
it's
right?
Probably.
Yeah.
I feel like I really don't have a favorite. I don't know. It's like they just keep growing as like I keep learning more, and now I'm getting into some more digital stuff using Procreate, yeah. And that's really fun. My boyfriend got mm-hmm. me this awesome iPad, so I can do that, and I've just that has elevated my process so much more, because I'm old school, so if I have like I have my whole collection behind me of all my medical books for my art, like a ton of Netter,
cool.
of course.
Oh, and, yeah, you know, tons of Netter.
Yeah, and I'd spend the whole weekend going through those books and finding the reference, and then, you know, it's such a longer process doing it manually, but with the digital, I mean, I can do something like all my prep work that would take me 2 to 3 hours now only takes me 2 to 3 minutes.
Nice.
And it's amazing.
That's awesome.
Because, yeah, I can put pieces out so much faster, but it almost, there is nothing like analog or manual art, but it's still
like
an expression.
Pen to paper art, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always been a massive release for me, but it's just, yeah. I feel like it's all tools. And so, and the same thing with technology, like helping medical stuff, but also with art. I think, like, you know, it's just another tool, and it's still a way you can express things that you need to express, and I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool. That's neat that you've kind of taken on, you know, the digital world, you know, that you haven't let that intimidate you. You know, you just took that head on and is like really allowed that to, you know, push your art forward. That's cool.
Yeah. It's been hard. It's really the adjustment if you're used to, you know, like you said, just regular old school pen to paper. But yeah. But it's still cool. I think once you get it down, it's like a nice little flow. It's faster to express, which is nice.
Time for an advertisement. Has listening to the Anatomy Nerd podcast made you think, I kind of want to start my own podcast? Well, if that's the case, I highly suggest you go with Buzzsprout. Buzzsprout is the hosting platform. I use Buzzsprout and I have been really, really pleased with them. You know, and podcasting isn't hard when you have the right partners. The team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping you succeed. And they make it easy to start a podcast. You can start at home with some gear that you already have. And if you want to upgrade, Buzzsprout has tons of guides to help you find the right equipment at the right price. Buzzsprout gets your show listed in every major podcast platform. You can follow the link in the show notes to let Buzzsprout know we sent you, and you get a $20 Amazon gift card if you sign up for our paid plan. And it helps support the Anatomy Nerd podcast. What more could you want? All right, now back to the show. Totally. Okay, so I have one little last fun question for you to wrap up the episode, and it's a question that I ask everyone now. It's kind of become the Anatomy Nerd podcast like final question, and I think I'm going to keep it. It's a silly one. I really like it. If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Oh my gosh. You know, I have
thought. Have you? I love it.
Normally, which so definitely Frida Kahlo.
Yes.
Most likely Fran Netter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Netter, Kahlo. Oh gosh, the third.
You rattled off those first two so easy.
I know. I've thought about that. Like, I have totally. Maybe Anthony Bourdain.
Oh, there we go. That would be a fascinating dinner.
Very, I think that'd be so fun. I think we'd all be pretty good friends by the end.
I think so. Okay, what are y'all eating?
Whatever Anthony Bourdain's cooking.
Okay, so he's not a guest at your dinner. He's like putting on the dinner.
He's also gonna cook for us. Yeah.
There we go. Okay.
I'll take whatever he cooks.
Oh my god! Seriously, even if it's just a scrambled egg, I'd be like, "That's the most amazing scrambled egg I've ever had in my life."
Knowing him, it's probably gonna be like bone marrow or something.
I know.
That's like one of his
wild
favorites,
and crazy. Or like snakes or some shit, like something crazy. Okay, what's for dessert?
Sure. Ooh. I'm not a dessert person, so I know, it's so weird. It's super weird.
What?
My twin is completely the opposite. She has the biggest sweet tooth ever, and I'm the type of person that I literally forget. For instance, when my boyfriend was here a couple weekends ago visiting, he bought like a pint of ice cream.
Yeah.
Put it in my freezer. I totally forgot it's there. I don't have anything sweet. I know.
Are you
I'm
serious?
One of those weird. I'm a pickle person over a cupcake. person.
Oh my god.
So I don't know. For dessert, for me, would have to probably be like very European, and I'd probably go for something like cheeses and like some type of liqueur or something to sip.
Type
of liquor.
That sounds bomb. I love
wine
that.
And cheese for dessert would be my kind of dessert.
Okay, there we go. I like it. Sign me up. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, Miss Olivia, thank you so much for being on the pod. I really, really appreciate you sharing all of your amazing knowledge about the ears and hearing loss and everything. It's just been really, really cool.
Same to you. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, I had so much fun today. Let's tell our listeners where they can find you. Where can they find your art and all of that stuff?
Oh, yeah, sure. I am on Instagram and online on website is Last Nerve. Art. So I chose that handle because it's kind of ironic and sarcastic. Last Nerve.
Uh-huh,
and
totally.
That's
You're on last my last nerve.
Uh-huh.
You're on my last nerve.
Yeah, exactly. Last nerve. So Last Nerve Art. Yeah, that's me. And you can find that on Redbubble or on online or Instagram. And on Facebook. I'm basically on all those as Last Note
all
Art.
Of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can get my cool anatomy art on stuff, like shirts and bags and stuff.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. I love it. Yeah. Check out our stuff, you guys. It's really amazing. I'm pretty obsessed. Obsessed. You're just so Thanks. Damn talented, Olivia.
Wow. Thank you.
All righty. Well, thank you again for coming on the podcast. It was so much fun. And for now, let's say hasta luego.
Hasta luego.
Thanks, listeners. Bye.
The information on this podcast is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All content, including text, graphics, images, and information contained on or available through this podcast is for general information.